Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Yeah, the rights remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door. Your running's over, that's for sure. He already knows all about you. Cut you down.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And as always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Want to give a shout out and thank you to our Patreon members and the convicts and Apple subscribers. And thank you, everyone, for liking and sharing the podcast and continuing to help us grow after all these years. Let's get down to an old school story today. I don't think I've told one from my state police days yet because most of them haven't been adjudicated all the way through, and I don't want to do anything to screw them up. And this one's going to be, I think it's safe for me to tell now, but I'm still going to use, we'll just say fake names, and you can infer who it is and where it was from. So we'll call this one Why Not Nine. All right, so the year was 2009, and I was a criminal investigator for the Louisiana State Police, and my office was at headquarters in Baton Rouge. Now, when you think of state police, when you say headquarters, people always think of their local troop, which is, they have troops all throughout the state, A, B, C, D, E, et cetera. In different geographical locations, and that troop in that area serves, as a home base for the troopers who work the parishes that surround that troop, right? But all those troops have letters, but there is one main headquarters that everything is run out of, and that is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and that's where my office was. And I was a criminal investigator and had gone over there on November 1 of 2007. I was recruited to be a criminal investigator to help with investigations and polygraphs and things like that. Now, troopers are experts at writing accidents, tickets, and DWIs. But they're not, in the beginning, they're not trained criminal investigators, we'll say. Not saying that they don't have a lot of great investigators, because they do, but they got trained over the years by other investigators, if that makes sense. So I had a big corner office on the second floor of headquarters, just outside of internal affairs office. And basically, I would do polygraphs, and I would help on investigations when needed with other jurisdictions and things like that. And so we'll go back to 2009, and I got a call from one of the colonels, Lieutenant Colonel, and they said, look, we got a request to help a sheriff's office, a small sheriff's office in the southwestern part of the state. I'm not going to say where y'all. And they want to know, can I send these two investigators, these two detectives, to talk to you? I said, yeah, I'm in my office. And so they came over, or I met them. They sit down, and these two younger guys. And y'all, keep in mind, I mean, I'm not throwing shade at all whatsoever at all when I tell you the story. I'm just telling the story. And most of these small sheriff's offices in these really rural parishes, they may have like one or two big towns. They certainly didn't have any big cities, if you will. But they didn't deal with a lot of murder, you know, and you'll be able to figure out geographically why I'm saying why not nine on this one as we go along. But these guys sit down, they were cool and everything. And you know, I said, hey, what's going on? And they had the big ass case file and said, look, we got a murder of a housewife. I said, okay, tell me what happened. And I said, well, on such and such date, this husband and wife, they live together at this location on about 5 acres. It's in a rural area. And most of that area, the people that work, they have like some manufacturing plants but they all assist in the oil field business, whether it's making pipe or valves or whatever it is that they do. You know, they do things to help the offshore industry and the drilling industry throughout the state of Louisiana. But anyway, so this couple had been married for about 4 years, and they were in their 30s, young 30s. And the husband said that he got up and he went to work. He's working 4-10s. Now, what that means, y'all, naturally is you work 4 days a week, 10 hours a day. And when the oil field industry was up, naturally they would get overtime. Like you'd work 7-10s or stuff like that. Sometimes they call it shutdowns or turnarounds or whatever, but the turnaround meaning that when you're working 7 days a week because all the orders are in and the industry is really busy, you go to work and you get home and you turn around and you go back to work, right? So anyway, the husband said he got up at 6 a.m., had his breakfast, and he kissed his wife goodbye, and he went to work. And when he came home that evening time, it was summertime, so it didn't get dark to about 8:30, almost 9 o'clock. And he said when he came home, he found the carport door ajar, and it led directly into the kitchen. And when he walked into the kitchen, He saw something that no one wants to see. He saw his wife on the floor, on her back, right arm up, left arm down, and she had on a pair of light blue shorts, which were pulled down probably to like mid-thigh area, and panties. And they were pulled down to the mid-thigh area, and her shirt was pushed up, and she didn't have a bra on, and her breasts were exposed. And she was dead, naturally, okay? He could tell she was dead. Her face was, she had some blood around outside of her lips, and, you know, her face was discolored, et cetera. So she had been down a while. So the husband calls 911, and the local deputy responded, and he ended up calling the detectives, and these are two of the detectives who were assigned to work the case, and they only had a couple of detectives, y'all. But they said, what do we got there? And, you know, the husband was distraught, and she's down. Of course, we sealed it off, worked it as a crime scene. And she's down. She had been down for a little bit because you could see the lividity where her shorts were pulled down. You could see the lividity on the bottom parts of her legs, and you could see it on her arm that was raised up, and on the arm that was down. Lividity being where when you die, your heart stops beating, and wherever the blood is in your body, it sinks. It's gravity. It sinks to the lowest point, and it turns. It looks like almost like bruising, if you will, but it's one solid area. So they said that you could see the lividity on her. She's an attractive young lady in her 30s, pants and panties down to around mid-thigh, shirt pressed up. They called in the crime lab, they called in, you know, the coroner and everyone. They worked it, and they tagged her and bagged her, and took her from the autopsy, and the autopsy showed that she had been strangled to death, and the bone in her neck was broken, and she had been hands-on strangled to death. No signs of sexual of rape, we'll say that. No signs of rape, or, you know, no tearing in the vagina or anything like that. And, you know, that's it. That was, of course, they've swabbed for DNA and all this stuff that had been sent off. Now, back in 2009, shit, it still took a long time to get DNA back. And I think that's when Jindal was the governor, and he had allocated more money for DNA testing and more scientists to do the tests, et cetera, but it still took a long time. It's not like they didn't have the familiar DNA and all this stuff now, and you didn't get it turned around quickly like you can now in homicide cases. But I said, okay, and what's the deal? I said, what did the husband say? And again, they said that he said he went to work for his 10-hour day, and when he came home, you know, he found her like that. All right, and so I said, "Well, do you have any?" Well, I knew close by there in the last 4 years, there were 8 women that had been found murdered and dumped in different bayous around the area. And I said, so, I mean, tell me about the husband. He's legit, right? And they said, yeah. And I mean, he cried, and he's willing to take a polygraph, and we don't have any suspects, man. It was a daytime murder, and, you know, we don't have any sex offenders in the area that are out. You know, we checked all the usual suspects. And I said, but do you believe the husband? And they said, yeah, he's alibied out. He was at work. I said, okay, well, what if he killed her before he went to work? And I said, well, I mean, thought about that. I mean, and I said, well, you're telling me she had lividity, right? And I'm looking at the pictures, y'all. And then I said, show me the pictures. And they did. And I'm looking at them, and I said, well, she's got lividity. And And so she was bent down. So, and I said, "What did the coroner or what did the pathologist say about that?" And the pathologist said she'd probably been down anywhere from, you know, like 8 to, you know, maybe 10 hours or something like that. And I'm thinking, okay, well, he could have killed her before he went to work. And they said, well, he's got no criminal history. You know, they dated for a couple of years. And I said, well, what about domestic violence? And they said, no, we got caught out there one time for an argument, but it was just a typical husband-wife thing. And I'm thinking, well, you know, you don't always know what goes on behind closed doors. And naturally, y'all, I'm looking at it. I'm in fresh eyes and armchair quarterback. And, you know, it's fortunately for me, at this point in my career, these cases weren't fresh for me, meaning they weren't my own. So unfortunate for those detectives, I got to play armchair quarterback and think about things that possibly they hadn't thought about. And that's why they were talking to me. And I said, well, you know, you got to start with the family, right? I said, this house, where is it located? And they showed me on a map and the aerial maps. I mean, they had done they had done good work, let's say that, for their experience. And look, you could see it from the road view. It sits back. It's a little brick, one-story house, and it was 3 bedrooms. It sits back from the road a little bit. Big trees in the yard, and it's on a highway, on a major state highway. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, the chances of someone just driving by and finding this woman in the middle of the day or yeah, after he leaves for work at 7 o'clock in the morning or whatever, 6:30, 7 o'clock. I think he had to be at work for 7, but it doesn't matter. I'm thinking the chances of someone just coming along and finding her and doing this, it's just, you know, no stranger danger in my head on this. But I said, look, I'm going to look at it. And just, you know, leave me the case file and I'll look at it. And if he's willing to take a polygraph, and they said, yeah, he's willing to take a polygraph, and we need to rule him out. I said, all right, let me look at it and I'll call you, you know, tomorrow or the next day and we'll set up a polygraph. I'll drive over there, y'all, because it was like 3 hours from Baton Rouge, probably at least. And it's a ways away. It's close. Let's just say it's a lot closer to Texas than it was Baton Rouge. And I said, let me call you. I said, I will come over and we can do the polygraph. I said, I don't want to do it at his house. And so y'all have an office I can use? And I said, yeah, we got an office. And I said, you think he's going to lawyer up? And they said, no, why would he? Then we don't think he had anything to do with it. I said, all right, well, I said, what about drugs? I mean, is he a known drug user? And they said, well, he's you know, in the past, we believe he used to smoke crack. But, you know, he's got a decent job and he's making good money working on his 410s. And, of course, the oil industry had been slow for a little bit. So he hadn't had any turnarounds. And so, anyway, long story short, they left and I started looking at the file, and getting into the pictures told me a lot. All right, on the way that I want to go. Now, whenever I worked a homicide, I always used to say photograph it like a homicide, meaning you photograph every inch, everything, no matter how irrelevant you think it is, you want everything photographed, because you never know what it is when you can come back with a fresh eye and look at the photographs and find something that you missed when you're on the scene. Because look, when you're on the scene, you know, you're fired up, it's a homicide, and you know, your adrenaline's running and everything else. But when I would photograph a homicide, now, of course, the crime lab people would take their photographs, et cetera, but I would always take my own, and I would shoot everything from every angle. It didn't matter what it was. But I'm looking in the photographs, and this home, it must have been, like a 1970 something home, probably built during one of the oil booms. And the kitchen floor she was laying on was like linoleum, like a goldish white. I don't want to say cheap linoleum, but think like 1970s linoleum, if that's the right word, flooring, and it's got like this white and gold yellowish pattern. And when I'm looking at her and I'm looking at the body, I didn't see any no damage to her hands, no broken fingernails, and of course, some of these photographs I'm looking at are from the autopsy also. But what I did see when I'm looking at her light blue shorts and her white panties pulled down, I saw that her panties and her shorts had soaked through with urine. That appeared to me to be, I assumed it was urine. It was a lot. And I'm thinking, there was no urine on the floor. There's no puddle on the floor. And how, if your shorts and your panties are pulled down, okay, when you die, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have bodily fluids that release, whether you defecate yourself or you urinate on yourself, your body just releases. If you hold anything in, it goes, right? But problem for me with this was I'm looking at the light blue shorts that you can see were dark in the crotch area from having been wet, and the panties had urine in them. And I'm like, okay, but they were pulled down and there's no urine on the floor in between her vagina and her panties and the shorts, then that tells me that she had the shorts and the panties on at the time of her death. Right? Yeah, I mean, there's no other explanation. It's not like she squirted, and when she was dead, her shorts were pulled down. She's being attempted to being raped and being choked out, and then her shorts pulled down, and her vagina just shoots out a stream of pee. Doesn't work like that. So that told me that the shorts had been pulled down after she was deceased and after she had urinated on herself. So I'm looking at that, and I thought, well, they said there was no signs of vagina trauma, for lack of a better term, during the autopsy. It didn't appear to be a rape. Well, then why are your shorts pulled down? You know, why is your shirt up? Why are your nipples exposed? So I'm just looking at everything, and then I go back to his timeline. He went to work, and he's alibied out at work. So I get the phone, and I get the detective back on. I called him and I said, hey man, I just got a couple questions for you. I said, he went to work, and they said, yeah. I said, I mean, did you ask him, did he ever leave work? And he was like, no. He said he went to work and we know where he works at. And I said, well, you know what? I said, why don't you just don't ask him, go to his work and see if he ever leaves work during the daytime. Now, I'm still thinking it could happen if he was guilty, it could have happened before work, but the lividity would have been, it would have been, they said like, I think it was like 6 to 10 hours, and 10 hours would have fit if she had been killed, if he was guilty, if she would have been killed ahead of time. The 6 hour part, not so much. Right. And so that's an area that had to be answered. I said, go to his work and ask discreetly as you can. And the guy was like, I know the supervisor. I said, well, call that dude and see if he ever leaves work, during the daytime at all, for anything. And he said, okay, we will. And I said, look, schedule him. Go ahead and schedule him for like the day after tomorrow, whenever it was, y'all would schedule it. I said, I'll drive down the night before and stay in the town that's closest. And then we'll hit him at like, get him in for like 9 o'clock in the morning. And so that's what we did. And on that day of the polygraph, I met them ahead of time. One of them went to pick them up. And I asked them, I said, would you check on the work thing? And they said, yeah. That's okay. Funny thing is, Woody, he said that he actually did leave work that day for a little bit during lunch. I said, okay. I said, you ask him about it? He said, no, not yet. I said, how long was he gone? And they said, they're not sure, but you know, he definitely didn't use his whole lunch break. He was back, or he wasn't missed. And I said, well, tell me about the work environment. I said, they got to punch in and out. And he said, no, it's like a fab shop type thing. And, you know, they can come and go. So nobody really keeps tabs on them, but they got to put in their time every day. And I said, it's a lot of workers. And you know, he said, yeah, it's a general parking area, and you can see it. I said, well, I mean, can you verify with anyone else how long he was gone during the day? And he said, well, we can. I said, let me ask you something else. I said, I know the house is in a rural area, and y'all had driven by it the day before when I got to town. I went by and looked at it. I said, the house is in that rural area. I said, but they got like three neighbors. And he's like, yeah, but they can't see the house. I said, yeah, but have you talked to them? That just to see. I mean you got to shake the trees on this, right? I'm not looking at just at the husband. If it's a stranger off the street, maybe they saw a different vehicle. I mean, we know this occurred during daylight hours. Can you go talk to them and see if anybody saw anything? And he was like, yeah, we can do that. He said, I think it's a waste of time. I said, well, just humor me on that one, right? And I'll get him in here, and I'll interview him, and I'll polygraph him. We'll see what's up, right? So they brought him in, and I introduced myself. And he's describing, he's a pretty big dude. He's like, I was like 6'2", and he was about an inch taller than me. Curly black hair, younger guy, he was younger than me. Early 30s, but big, strong fed country boy. And I was like, all right, anyway, I introduced myself and I said, look, you know, I advise everybody their rights. I said, you're not under arrest. I said, I understand that you're here voluntarily, right? And he said, yeah. He's scared to say the least, but certainly appeared to be a little bit traumatized and all that. And so I had to work him, right? I had to do, if I was going to get any juice from him, I had to get it. But I had to get on his level, figure out how I was going to play him. And I figured, you know, he's got some grief on him, some sadness, but he's a fucker, was also scared. And I picked that up right away. But there's no other detectives in the room. It's just me. And so I said, look, you know, unfortunately, I'm sorry for your loss. And you know, I hate it that you found your wife like that. And he was like, yeah, and kind of holding his head down, doing some sniffling and stuff. I said, but look, I got to ask you a lot of hard questions today. I said, this is what I do. You know, I work homicides.
Do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different from Mother's Day that will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. And MyLifeInABook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I want to find out who killed your wife. I said, don't you want me to find out? And he had his hands kind of down, head down in his hands like that, not giving me direct eye contact. And I was like, don't you want me to find out? And he was shaking his head. I said, hey, I said, look at me. And, let's call him John, all right? I'm not going to use his name. I said, John, look at me. And he looked up at me and kind of sniffled. And I said, don't you want me to find out? He said, well, yeah, I do. That's why I'm here. And I said, okay. I said, then look, we got a lot of tough shit to talk about. You know, I said, I'm going to ask you questions. I want you to paint it for me like a movie, act like I know nothing, which I don't know that much, act like I know nothing. And then we'll get into the polygraph and we'll form the questions that are fair to you and that are relevant to this situation. Okay. So I'm not going to ask you any surprise questions or anything like that. I said, it's going to be the easiest test you ever took because you're going to help me make up the questions. And it's going to only be pertaining to the death of your wife, right? I said, we need to get you clear so we can go on and focus on other people and finding out this monster that basically broke your wife's neck. And he's like, okay. I said, well, first, you know, we got a Miranda rights form. He said, well, they read me my rights. He said, but I'm not a suspect. I said, I understand that. I said, I read everybody their Miranda rights. I said, you might tell me you shot President John F. Kennedy. And he's kind of looking at me stupid. I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know what you're going to tell me, but I don't want to be in a court of law one day and you just blurt out that you did such and such and me not be able to use it against you, right? I said, it's my job. It's nothing personal. And so he was like, okay. And so I advised him, it's Miranda rights off a sheet. And meaning that I read it line for line, y'all, naturally I know it, but I read it line for line. And then at the bottom, there was a consent to question part. First, it was the place where you sign that you understood your rights. And the bottom was consent to question, which said, I consent to voluntarily and freely answer questions. No threats or promises have been used against me. I did not want a lawyer at this time, blah, 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 whatever. And so I read it all off to him, and I kind of pull my chair around to the side of him where we're almost touching, right, closing that distance, and read it all down to him. I checked each line. You have the right to remain silent. I put a little line there, right? I had him initial each one because I'm going to tell you something. I didn't have a good feeling about this cat, right? But I also didn't have dick to go on. But it wasn't my investigation. But I just had a bad feeling. And so I had him sign or initial each one of the lines and then sign that he understood his Miranda rights. And then I did the same thing for the consent to questioning. And then I had him sign that he didn't want a lawyer and he voluntarily consent to questioning, et cetera. So it's a big old boy and I'm sitting close to him like that, but I didn't back off of him. Right. And I could feel when I slid close to him, like it bothered him, not like in a homophobic way, but just like, you know, he thought I was going to be sitting back behind the desk. I said, but look, I said, John, the first of all, the polygraph process, it takes forever, right? Because I want to take my time and get you clear. And I want to make sure that we make the questions up together that are fair and relevant to the situation. So I'm not going to ask you about anything, you know, you did before the date that you found your wife murdered and all that. I said, but no, we got polygraph rights too. I said, under Louisiana law, you have to give me permission to give you this test. And so I read those to him and I had him sign that also. And then I explained the polygraph process. And I said, now look, I need you, which y'all, that takes a while, explaining the process. And, you know, we're going to make the questions and I'm going to attach you to the instrument and we're going to run a practice test. And then we're going to run three different charts, meaning I'm going to ask you the questions we agree upon three separate times and all that. I said, I believe you 1,000%, unless when we get done and I score the charts and you show deception indicated, I said, then you and I'll talk about whatever it is, the problem that you have. And so I said, look, tell me what happened. You wake up that morning and what happens? And it was like, well, you know, I woke up and I reviewed all his statements and I didn't tell you exactly what they were, but he said, well, I woke up and I took a shower and, you know, put on my work clothes and I put on my work boots and I went in the kitchen and I had my coffee and my toast. And he said, my wife was still sleeping and I gave her a kiss and I went to work. I said, all right. I said, did you see anybody around your house or anything? Any strangers or anything like that? He said, no, I wasn't paying attention. I just went to work. I said, well, tell me about your work. And he said, well, you know, I work 10 hours a day right now. We're working 4-10s and I do this. I'm not going to say what it was, y'all. And he said, I do this. And I said, well, when you go to work, that you bring your lunch with you? He said, oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you, I packed my lunch and I went to work. I said, all right. I said, you were at work all day? He said, yeah, I was at work all day. I said, you didn't leave for anything? He said, no, I didn't leave. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah. No, I stayed there. I said, so when you take your lunch break, how long do you have? He said, well, they don't really force it on us. You know, he said, I'd be working a job on one specific project. And whenever I get a break, I take a break. I said, well, is it 30 minutes? Is it an hour and a half? I mean, do you get to take a nap? He said, no. It's usually 30 minutes to an hour. I said, well, okay. And on this day, now y'all look, I knew I had him because the detective had already talked to the foreman and they said, yeah, he did leave for a little bit, but he came right back. And so, I knew he was lying about that. And I was like, here we go. Let's see what else he's going to lie about. And I said, well, go ahead and tell me. He said, well, you know, and I drove home. I said, when you drove home, did you see any suspicious vehicles or anything like that? No. And he said, and I came in, and he put his head back down, and I put my arm on his back. I said, it's okay, buddy. You know, you could tell me. They said, and I found her on the floor like that. And I said, well, tell me what that like that means. And so you didn't see the pictures and stuff. I said, yeah, but maybe you can recall something in your mind that I didn't see. And he said, well, she was on the floor and her shorts were pulled down and her shirt was pushed up and I could just tell she was dead. And she had a little blood around her mouth and her face didn't look right. Her eyes were open and they were just staring off into space. And I was like, all right. I said, did you check for a pulse? He said, no, I just went and called 911 and the detectives came. I said, okay, well, I said, you know, that's it, right? I said, has she been fighting with anybody? He said, no. And I said, has she been having an affair? I said, look, these are hard questions, but I got to ask him. He said, no, she hadn't been having an affair. And I said, okay. I said, you know what? Well, you want some water or something? I said, man, I'm thirsty. Thirsty as fuck. Let me go get us some water. He said, okay. And so I leave the interview room and the detectives are watching the closed circuit TV. And I went in there. I said, listen, I said, did you find out any more about his work when he left? And they said, yeah, that he was gone probably 30 or 40 minutes. And I said, the neighbors. And he said, we got somebody checking on it now. And I said, their past and the violence thing, there was no hands on, he wasn't arrested. And he said, no. I said, all right. I said, I need to know the work stuff and I need written statements that he left the work and from as many people as you can get it that day. And I said, I'm going to drag this out before we start the polygraph because I need to put that question in there. And I said, okay. I said, and go talk to the fucking neighbors and see if they saw him, going to work, coming from work or any other time that day. Anyway, they were like, we're kind of shorthanded. I said, bro, I drove 3.5 hours here. You know, you got a lot of unsolved murders in this area in the last 4 or 5 years, right? And I said, just humor me on this one, all right? I'm here to help. So go back in, and I'm going to start forming the questions for the polygraph. And the first thing I did, I explained how the polygraph worked. And then it goes off here. Your cardio and your what they used to call galvanic skin response, now they call it the electrodermal activity, EDA. That's just basically your hands sweating, y'all, and the blood pressure cuff on your arm. It's not, like I told him, I said, it's not taking your blood pressure. All I'm doing is monitoring any different amount of blood flow into that artery, and explain fight, flight, or freeze. So if this door kicks open right now and it's a bad guy with a gun and he points at your head and says, John, I'm going to kill you. What are you going to do? And he said, well, I'm going to try to get the gun from him. I said, right. I said, that you're going to do one of three things. You're either going to fight, flight, or freeze. You chose to fight. I said, but as soon as your brain recognizes that gun as that weapon is a threat, or a possible threat to your body's well-being, you get an adrenaline dump into your brachial and femoral arteries. It's so you can respond faster. So it goes back to the caveman days when dinosaurs chasing the caveman and he has that extra juice to climb up a tree or whatever. I said, so the blood pressure cuff's going to be on your arm. I'm not going to be taking your blood pressure, all I'm be looking is any difference amount of flow in that brachial artery. I said, if you lie about something, the only reason somebody lies about something is because if they tell the truth, it's going to cause them some kind of problem. So your body basically gets that same kind of reaction in that one area. I said, the galvanic skin response or the EDRs, I said, I'm going to put some finger plates on you today, or maybe I might use gel pads. I said, they are for simply to monitor any difference amount of sweat in the palms of your hands. I said, same bad guy comes in the door and he points the weapon at me. People think sweaty palms are a bad thing. They're actually a good thing. They're a self-defense mechanism. Bad guy comes in the door, points the firearm at me. Then my brain says, uh-oh, got a situation here. I get that adrenaline dump, right? That's being monitored by the blood pressure cuff. I said, I'm also going to produce more sweat in the palms of my hand in times of stress or emergency. I said, one hand being totally dry, and y'all took my left hand and wiped it on my pants, and I slid it across the table real easy. I said, see how easy that slides? I said, this hand not being wiped off fresh like that has a little bit of sweat on it, and I drug it across the table, and you could see it drug much slower. I said, so I see the firearm pointed at me. I get the adrenaline dump, then increase my body automatically. Increases the sweat in the palms of my hands, and then I can draw my weapon. Yeah, because when I have a weapon on them, I always got a pistol. I mean, draw my weapon faster, and increase tackiness in the palms of my hand helps me maintain a better grip upon the weapon. Right? I said, so you know, these things that I have hooked up to you today, they're not going to shock you or anything like that. All they're doing is monitoring any difference amount of blood flow skin sweat in the palms of your hands and on your fingers. And you understand? He's like, yes, sir. And I said, finally, I'm going to put two tubes on you. I said, one across your upper chest and one across your abdomen. And I said, people think it's you're measuring during the polygraph, you're measuring the breathing. I said, that's kind of true, but not exactly true. So what's going to happen is it's same thing, the fight, flight, or freeze. Bad guy comes in the door. You see the weapon. You say, oh, fuck. You get the adrenaline dump. Get that extra amount of blood flow into your arteries. Sweat increases in the palms of your hand. Well, the other thing that happens is your intercostal and your abdominal muscles involuntarily tense up further than normal. And he kind of looked at me like, what are you talking about? I said, well, check this out. I said, when your intercostals and muscles in your upper chest tense up further than normal, then your lungs have more room to expand and take in more air. And it was like kind of looking at me. I said, when your abdominal muscles tense up further than normal, then your diaphragm has more room to expand and take in more air. And it was like, I said, check it out. Bad guy points the gun. Blood flow is rediverted, right? Blood pressure cuff. Sweat increases in your hands, right? Helps you, you know, if you're going to grab a weapon or you're going to climb a tree, whatever, it just helps you maintain a better grip. I said, when your intercostals shrink and your lungs can expand further and take in more air, and your abdominal shrinks and your diaphragm can take in more air than normal. And let's say you were going to fight this guy, right? I said, you ever been in a fist fight and you're fighting, and it seems like you're fighting for an hour, but it's only 3 minutes. And then when you get up, you're doing all this deep breathing, or you run from something when you're scared, and the whole time you're running, but you don't realize you're doing all this heavy, deep breathing, right? I said, when you stop and then you realize, and your adrenaline starts to kick back down, you realize you're doing all this heavy breathing. I said, what that happens is during that time, your intercostals shrink up and those lungs can expand further in times of emergency and take in that more air that you don't even realize that you need to run away or to fight this guy. And the same thing on your abdominals. Shrinking up, you know, that diaphragm can get that more air, right? And because you're juiced, either you're fighting or whatever it is that you're doing, fight, flight, or freeze. I said, so I'm going to put a tube across your upper chest and one across your abdomen, and I'm not going to be measuring your breathing per se. What I'm going to be doing is measuring any difference in that in your intercostal and your abdominal muscles, which involuntarily shrink up to give you more air in times of stress. And again, I tell you, what does this have to do with lie detector, right? And I kind of told you already, but I'm explaining it to you again. that any time that you lie, it's because if you think you tell the truth. Any time a lie has been told since the beginning of time between two people, it's because of one reason. One person asked that other person a question, and that person's brain grabbed hold of that question and said, oh, shit, if I don't answer this a certain way, it's going to cause me a problem. I said, no, let me give you an example. A long time ago, I used to be a single dad, and I was putting my daughter down for Christmas Eve, and she was young. She was probably 4 years old, we'll say. And I'm putting her down for Christmas Eve, and I'm getting ready to go, you know, get out all the presents that Santa's bringing, all that shit. And when I'm putting her down, I'm tucking in, we're saying a prayer, and I'm getting ready to leave the room. She looks up and she says, Daddy? I said, what, baby? She said, are you really Santa Claus? And I was like, oh, fuck. And I don't want to tell her I really am Santa Claus and ruin her last Christmas. I said, but guess what happened, John? I said, when she asked me that question, my brain grabbed a hold of that question and said, oh, shit, if you tell her this, you're going to ruin her last Christmas. You might make her cry and blah, blah, blah. But I said, so at any time your brain perceives a question as a threat or a possible threat to the body's well-being, it automatically sends a message to your autonomic nervous system, which is the part of your central nervous system which controls all your bodily functions you don't have to think about every day, like your breathing, your digestive tract, sweat, whatever, right? But your autonomic nervous system, or I'll call it the ANS for short, also serves as your body's self-defense mechanism. I said, so when she asked that question, guess what happened? The same three physiological changes I told you I'm going to be testing you on today. She asked me that question. My brain said, oh, fuck. And it automatically sends a warning message to the ANS, or the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system also acts as your body's self-defense mechanism. And when it gets that warning from the brain to prepare the body for fight, flight, or freeze, it automatically gives you that adrenaline dump of that extra blood flow into your arteries. It increases the sweat in the palms of your hand, and it changes the movement in your abdominal and your upper body, your chest muscles. I said, now, the brain doesn't know. Certainly, there's just different levels of threat in the question, right? The brain doesn't know. When it sends a message to ANS, the ANS doesn't know if it's me having to lie to my daughter about being Santa Claus, or if I'm lying about a murder, right? I said, you're certainly going to get a stronger force the more dangerous the question is to you, isn't it, right? And I said, but it's there, and you can't stop it, and you can't control it. And I said, so today, when I ask you these questions, if you lie to me, that I'm going to be able to tell, I'm going to score the three areas that I'm monitoring, and so many points to the positive, you pass it, no deception indicated, so many points to the negative, you fail it, deception indicated, and if there's not enough data to score, you get it inconclusive. And I really don't do inconclusives, but I'll explain that to you before we start the test about countermeasures, etc. All right, y'all, I'm going to stop. I didn't mean to go this long. I'm going to stop this episode right now. We'll continue it next week. And the episode is Why Not 9. Stick with it. I haven't done a state police story before. I was thinking about this one and some more old school stories. And I'm going to tell you what happened in this case. And it won't be with longer than two parts. I hope not. I've got a lot of requests over the years, and from lifers to work the Jennings 8 case. And if you know about it, I mean, there's been documentaries and everything else about it. And I've never have done anything on it because I actually have direct knowledge in that case, and I'm not going to do anything to screw it up. But remember, this case is called Why Not 9. And So thank you for tuning in and listening. Patreon convicts, Apple subscribers, you are getting another bonus episode before the end of March. I love all you lifers. Go check out our crew page that on Facebook. I think it's got like 42,200 something members. But more importantly, go to the App Store and download the Real Life Real Crime Community app for free. It's got everything, all the episodes of Real Life Real Crime. It's got forums and group chats. And I go in there every day and I answer it first before I go answer six or seven Facebook pages and all the other social media that I have. We still got things coming up, people. I want to give a shout out to LOPA. Well, I always do, right? But the LOPA and the Louisiana Coroners Association for having me speak at LOPA headquarters last Friday. It was amazing to get to see Roy and the two Christians from Parish Forensics and Louisiana Pet Crematory. I also got to see my good buddy Joe Harrell, who's assistant coroner for Livingston Parish. I hadn't seen him in probably 20 years. And he and I cut our teeth together on go back and listen to like Pants on the Ground and different episodes like that. And he's getting ready to retire next week. So congratulations, Joe. Well deserved, bro. And I got to meet a lot of great lifers, and y'all know who you are. I love and appreciate every one of you. Next week, I'm going to be speaking in Bossier at the Louisiana Probation and Parole Association's conference, keynote speaker there. And I'm also going to be judging a cook-off form of there. I think it's the Iron Chef something or another. So that's it. Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency, man. What a great bunch of people, y'all. It's a nonprofit. They save lives every day. They work with the Coroner's Association and everybody else, and they take care of these families even after their loved ones have passed and become heroes and been organ donors. You don't have to be from Louisiana to sign up to be an organ donor. You can be from a lifer from Colorado. And just go to LOPA.org, take 2 minutes, fill it out, become a hero, give the gift of life and sight and all that great stuff. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And until next time, or ever, don't let me catch you down on Murder Bayou. Peace.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
At your door, your running's over, that's for sure. He already knows all about you. Cut you down on Murder Bayou. Now you better walk the
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.